All right. And we started talking about kosher, but we did not finish the kosher aspect, did we?
Okay.
And I've got several questions to ask you about that, as I always do. Maybe one day we'll get together on it. Okay, but that's where we got to.
Okay.
All righty. So you start, and then we'll listen.
Okay. So I believe, if I am correct, that last week the concept of kosher, and we said that the idea of kosher has to do with holiness, I believe we said, and holiness is not a mystical, but a holiness means where the person is removed insofar as humanly possible from the instinctual gratifications. And in that way, he reflects the holiness of the Creator, because the Creator is non-physical and the Creator. And when man lives according to his intellect, according to his mind, there's a supremacy of the intellect. He is holy. That's why it says, "You should be holy because I, God, am holy." That is the connection between man's holiness and God's holiness. So although they are two different things, there is a common thread insofar as man on man's level, he, so to speak, he can imitate the Creator by guided by his by the supremacy of his intellect. Now, let me explain that point a little more, that kosher really, as I said, has nothing to do with health rules, because if these were health rules, then God would give them to all people, not just to B'nai Israel, but he'd give them to the entire world. So they aren't health rules. Being holy because of the nation. The nation has an obligation to live a certain lifestyle. And as I mentioned, that's openly in... at the end of the laws of keeping kosher, for your own reference, it's Leviticus 11. The end of the chapter there. Okay. Now, what I want to mention is like this: that you see, it's interesting, but. The idea of the concept of kashrus emerges from looking at the Bible, but also from looking at the interpretation, the way we understand the Bible. And in the 613 commandments, there are negative commandments with regard to keeping kosher, and then there are also positive. And this would seem on the surface to be puzzling, because we can understand negative commandments. In other words, don't eat the camel, okay? Don't eat the swine. Don't eat the horse. These are all negative things, because you're not supposed to do these things. You're supposed to refrain from them. That's a negative commandment. In the 613 count, there are also positive commandments with regard to keeping kosher. Now, the question is, how could a person fulfill a positive commandment with regard to keeping kosher? Keeping kosher really is just avoidance of something. There's nothing positive about it. Now, with regard to the Sabbath, that there also you have a positive commandment, but that is no problem. Because, and you have to follow carefully for just a moment. It's a little bit conceptual. But with regard to the Sabbath, there is a positive fulfillment of abstention from work during the entire 25-hour period. Okay? So the abstention is considered a positive thing, because natural, so then this is a positive concept. The same thing with fasting. Fasting, not eating for the 25-hour period on Yom Kippur. That also is a positive commandment. Why? Because the abstention is viewed as a positive thing. You ordinarily would eat, and now you abstain. So abstention is considered a positive kind of a thing. If you think about it from a logical standpoint, it would be the difference between blindness and if a cat is blind or if a bat is blind. See, a bat really, truly is not blind. A bat just has very limited eyesight. That's its nature. That's not considered blind. Blindness is a positive thing. Blindness means a cat would be blind because their sight should be there and it's missing. It's called a privative. Something has been deprived of something. So the deprivation is considered a positive thing. So blindness in a person, for instance, is considered a positive thing. He is blind. It means he's deprived of sight. Since sight belongs to him naturally, so then he's being deprived. That's a positive concept. That's the same thing. That's how there's a positive concept with keeping the Sabbath. Otherwise, there's nothing positive about the Sabbath. It's just negative. It's things you can't do. But there is a positive commandment as well, because through abstention, through depriving yourself from that which is natural to you, there is a positive entity. That's why when the Torah says you shall work for 6 days, it's not a commandment. It doesn't mean you should work. You must work. If a person is wealthy, he doesn't have to work. It means the nature of man is to work during the 6 days. That's his nature. That's what he's involved in, that he's permitted to do this, and this is something which is natural to him. Therefore, as long as he abstains, that becomes a positive kind of a concept. He's abstaining now from what he normally would be doing. That's why the Torah says you should work for 6 days. It doesn't mean you should work. You must work for 6 days. It means to say there's no Sabbath unless you construe, you understand man as being a six-day worker by nature. And now, that's fine when it comes to the Sabbath. Even though it's negative, it still is. There's a positive commandment as well, which counts as one of the 613. But when you come to keeping kosher, there it becomes a little more difficult. How could you say there's a positive commandment not to eat pork, for instance? There's nothing, you can't say abstention from pork. I mean, it's not man's nature to eat pork or to eat the camel or something.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Before you get back to that one, you mentioned the work on the Sabbath. We've been told by some in the past that it was the Ben Noach was obligated to work on the Sabbath. In fact, we've been told that the Ben Noach, if he failed to work any day, that he could be punished even to the point of being put to death for failure to labor. That it said, for instance, we were told if we took a vacation, the Ben Noach, if he took a vacation, he should do some kind of meaningful work on every day because he was not permitted not to work. And even on the Sabbath, see, we could acknowledge the Sabbath, as we've said before, without doing one of the 39 prohibitions to say that we're obligated to do some type of work. I would like for you to elaborate on that.
Okay.
And then before you get back to the kosher, see, if we're doing this as far as sanctification for the name of God,
yes, okay,
then it would be a positive thing. All right, you see where I'm coming from?
Yes, I understand.
Okay, all right.
According to Maimonides, let me take Maimonides' view. There's Rashi has a view here also, but according to Maimonides, the violation for the Ben Noach is to not that he has to work the last Rambam, not that he has to work every day, but he's not allowed to proclaim a holiday, which means that he's creating a kind of religion on his own. That's the way Maimonides has it. Now, the Sabbath is not right. The Sabbath, if he abstains from work on the Sabbath, since he's not commanded to do this, it would be considered as if he made up his own religion, and that's what is wrong with that, because the Ben Noach is the Ben Noach has no. And as far as Sabbath is concerned, that's not a commandment which is appropriate for him. Now, since that doesn't exist in the Torah for the Ben Noach, his positing, his acting on the Sabbath as if his abstaining from work on the Sabbath in a positive way, the violation is not so much because he's not working, not at all actually because he's not working, but it's because he's creating a holiday for himself. And that, as you know, is a major philosophical and halachic violation for the Ben Noach as well as for the Ben Israel, as we read in last week's reading. You're not allowed to add or to diminish. So So with the idolatrous trend of the human mind begins when man starts creating
Rabbi,
laws.
A point.
That is Maimonides' interpretation.
All right, but not creating a holiday,
right.
But the Ben Noach can take upon additional mitzvot
right.
if he chooses.
Yes, but not the Sabbath.
All right, but he could, what? Why not the Sabbath, not as a Ben Israel,
right.
but we go back to the fact that God rested on the seventh day, and you have this seventh day concept that is in the Torah pre-synaptic.
Okay, I'll try to go a little bit deeper with this.
Okay.
And that is, like they see, a Ben Noach can do a mitzvah. He can do a mitzvah, according, there's no question about that. That he, for instance, he could take a lulav, he could take an esrog, he could sit in a sukkah, he could do those mitzvahs because those are positive things. But since the Sabbath is a question of whether it is, see, Sabbath, you can't make the Sabbath. Sabbath is something which exists. Now, since it doesn't exist for the Ben Noach, because he's not part of the 613, if he were to treat it as if it exists, he would be, in essence, just making up his own holiday. That's why Maimonides says he can't rest on the Sabbath or any other day of the week as well. In other words, he can't create a day of rest. Now, insofar as you mentioned, that's certainly the Ben Noach is obligated to do, to recognize, because that's the fact of creation, that God, the harmony of the universe did not appear until the seventh, first through the sixth, and then on the seventh, the harmony was created in the universe, and God created these stages and the ultimate harmony. That concept that Ben Noach is obligated to accept, and certainly is permitted, and it is even virtuous for him to recognize this. He could do this on the Sabbath, and he could recognize this, and this is fine. But he shouldn't treat it as a holiday in terms of halacha. He shouldn't create any halacha, which wouldn't apply to him. That's the only violation. Okay. Are there any questions on that?
All right. I would come back to the point as if it's a point of clarity. On a philosophical level, we can acknowledge the seventh day.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we're not creating a holiday. All right. I don't know of anyone that would want to observe the Sabbath as do you as a Ben Israel.
Mm-hmm.
But since it is a biblical, and I don't want to use the word holiday, but it's a day that God blessed. In the creative aspect, I think we could enjoin that day and acknowledge it as the day that God blessed and set apart from in the harmony of the universe, as you said.
Yes, that's correct.
But that's not creating
no.
a holiday. But then to say that I must go out and do some type of physical labor, see, I think
no, that's
that,
not true. That's not true.
Okay, I think that would be putting an additional mitzvah upon me. We have six negatives and one positive, and then if you say, well, you've got to work on the Sabbath,
right.
then you are adding to my mitzvahs then.
That's correct. That's correct. This is the view that we've discussed is by all means correct, and that's the view of Maimonides.
Okay. And then secondly, in the same vein, to say that if I take a holiday, go to Gulf Shores, Alabama, or up to the mountains, and to say that I have to do some type of positive work in that, I think that's adding to the mitzvah also.
Well, that's great. That's the view. I mean, your questions are very good, and the view of Maimonides is exactly the way I explained it, and there is no obligation for the Ben Noach to work every day, and that's basically the accepted view. The reason why you've got into this problem is because there is a Rashi in the tractate of Sanhedrin, which has his own interpretation. He gives a different interpretation. It's not like Maimonides, but as I said, I feel that the main authority in this area really is Maimonides. And there is, however, Rashi, which does say a strange thing. It is a very strange Rashi, But Rashi interprets that very same piece of the Talmud, where it says that a non-Jew that rests on the Sabbath is in violation. So Rashi says that it means that he rested from his a complete day. He's not allowed to cease from work for a complete day. Now, that's where you got that other information from. And that's not Maimonides' opinion. As I said, that's not the mainstream opinion. That's the opinion of Rashi. Now, in my opinion, just to explain Rashi's concept a little bit, just to give you an idea, the reason for this, for Rashi's interpretation, which sounds at first very strange that you can't take a day off, is based on the concept that it is not good for man to be idle, you see. Now, the reason why, because you'll ask a question, you'll say, well, how come the Ben Israel can take off days and the Ben Noach cannot take off days? That doesn't sound fair. But according to Rashi's opinion, what Rashi maintains is that the philosophy of Torah is, it is never a good thing for a person to be idle. Now, when the Ben Israel, for instance, has a holiday, his holiday, if it's done properly, and most B'nai Israel do not do it, unfortunately, properly, he's supposed to be studying the entire holiday. As a matter of fact, when you have like this whole week, like Passover or Sukkot, you have an entire week, the days in the beginning, and the beginning holy days, you're supposed to be studying half a day. We in the yeshiva get up at about 5 o'clock in the morning, and we study until 1. And the holiday is the second half of the day, which usually wind up eating a nice meal and then going to sleep because you're so tired from getting up early. But during the intermediate days, you're really supposed to send them in study as well. A holiday, frankly, if it's kept properly, according to the Torah law, doesn't resemble anything of a holiday that people think or have in mind, you know, when they want to go on holiday. The Torah's holiday is a lot of work. It's really hours of study and prayer, and it's actually, as I said, it's like from 5, we're in it usually from about 5, depending on, you know, the time of the year, 5 to 1. That's a total of 8 hours. So the Torah's concept is much different than our concept, the American concept of having fun. The Torah really believes that man is happiest when he's engaged in doing something. And idleness, just being idle and just laying around, is not considered in the eyes of Torah as being idle. That's why it states, that's why Rashi interprets that the Ben Noach, who has no obligation to study Torah, and who is not involved usually in the study of Torah, if he's just going to take a day off, it really is a waste, and idleness is something which is really not a good thing for man. A person is happiest when he's productive. Okay, so he doesn't have to work 8 hours a day, but he could put in some kind, he should do something productive in a day. To allow a day to go by without being productive is, according to Rashi, in the eyes of the Torah, an improper way of life, which leads a person, the Talmud, for instance, says, the Talmud has a statement, which is that in Hebrew it's batala mevil deshimon. Doing nothing leads to devastation. It leads to a person disintegrating ethically, morally, and physically in every way. As a matter of fact, even physically, I read recently where they say that a lot of people over the weekends are just, you know, they're looking for this rest, and they just lay around all day, and they say that they really, over a two-day period, the body really does, it's not good for the body. It takes its toll, and it's actually counterproductive. But the Torah, that's the philosophy according to Rashi. So according to Rashi, it's no human being, whether Ben Israel or Ben Noach, should be idle. But since Ben Israel has so many obligations, it's impossible for him to be idle. As David pointed out, from the time you open your eyes in the morning until you go to sleep, you're busy all day. Now, the Ben Noach, since he only has the 7 laws, so he doesn't have this kind of positive obligation, so he must not allow, in some way, he doesn't have to work a 6-hour day, but some kind of productivity he should do. A human being should not allow a day to go by without being productive in some shape, form, or manner. That's Rashi's concept. So I just want to show you that while that's the mainstream interpretation of the law, nevertheless, his idea is not crazy. His idea does have a sound philosophical basis. That's where you heard that idea that you can't take a day vacation. I'm trying to explain it a little more clearly, and it's first and sounds absurd. Okay,
Rabbi.
Yeah.
Okay, here's the point. Then suppose we go over to the cabin at the lake.
Right.
All right. If we sit on the porch in the swings, and as Jim Dalton says, this is a good topic for the front porch. And we go out there and we sit on in the swings and in the chairs, and we discuss one of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach, or the implications of it. If it's for 5 minutes or 5 hours, then that would be work, would it not? Would that be considered work?
That's a good question. That is a good question. I mean, according to Rashi, would that be considered? Would that be considered work if you were involved in the study of the mitzvot? That's a good question. I would like to think. I like to do a little more thinking about that. That happens to be a good question. According to Rashi's opinion, Would that be considered working? I'd rather than answer you on the spot, I'd rather think about it. Okay. Again, this is only according to Rashi. There's no such question.
Okay, but let me give you another point. So here's a point that there's no disrespect to you or any of the rabbis in this statement.
Right.
Every time this subject has been breached, there's always the emphasis put on the fact that you just have seven laws. And yet, we have never been told to actively pursue these and spend time studying Torah to identify the laws.
Right.
And the positive and the negative admonitions. In fact, we said, well, you can't study Torah because it's not yours.
Well, that's what I wanted to, that's exactly what I wanted to point out, as a matter of fact.
All right, but see, how are we to know without the study of Torah? You can't just go up to Lawrence Ledford and say, hey, boy, you don't commit idolatry. You understand that?
Right.
You've got to explain to him why and how.
Why?
And you can't do that without Torah.
That's absolutely right.
And then Lawrence is going to have questions, and we're going to have to be philosophical about it. We're going to have to study all the ins and outs and the things that we've been doing for the last 20 years.
That's correct.
And so when you get up at 5 o'clock and study till 1 o'clock, that's work. But what if we start at 1 o'clock and we go to 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning that we've done many times, and you've been at my house at 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning studying Torah?
That's correct. Again, according to Maimonides, there's not even a question that is perfectly fine. Your question is according to Rashi's opinion. And as I said, that's not the mainstream opinion, but the question nevertheless is a valid one according to Rashi. And the point you're making is that, which the Talmud says, that the real ideal Ben Noach, and you know very well that, and this is something you mention all the time, that while, you know, seven laws sounds like, well, they're very nice, they just don't have to do anything. You know very well that the ideal Ben Noach is one that's involved constantly in the study of Torah. That is the picture, the image of the ideal Ben Noach. And that means, as you have stated, the studying of those seven laws. And believe me, you could spend your entire life and you will not finish the complete study of the seven laws in the Talmud, because it's very intricate and very deep, and it's something which is like all the other parts of the Torah, which is really infinite. I mean, no human mind has ever claimed to finish the Talmud. So I would suggest that we do start this, because I think this is very important. As a matter of fact, in the yeshiva this coming year, I plan to study the areas of the Talmud that deal with these seven laws myself and with my students. And perhaps when I get there, we could make some kind of arrangement to go over the, you know, maybe once a week or so, give a little class on the in-depth study of the seven laws. Not like, you know, most people think it's just seven simple laws. That I think would be an excellent thing. It's a scientific process. It's abstract thinking, and I don't know if everyone can follow all the way, but some of you can, and some will, you know, just go to a certain stage, just like in the yeshiva, where not everybody is on the highest level, but each person finds their own level. We could try that in the future. I would personally think it's extremely important, because when you study the Talmud and the seven laws and the whole approach, it's a different kind of a thing. It has a different meaning. It's a positive commandment to abstain from work on the Sabbath. They don't have the concept. But these ideas, you have to study these ideas, and you understand them philosophically and halachically, and it's a different world, a different religious world for the person. I agree with Dave 100% on that. But nevertheless, I'm still going to think about that question that you asked me insofar as Rashi is concerned, whereas I want you all to know that according to Maimonides, this is not even a question and there's no problem. But according to Rashi, it happens to be a good question. If the Ben Noach is involved in study, would that be considered for him work? Okay, again, give me time on that one. I'll get back to you. Okay. Okay, where are we at now? Okay, so should I just continue? All right, so we were discussing the kashrus. Now the question is, how do you have a positive law not to eat certain animals? That seems to be a negative thing. Okay, negative again is abstention, positive is doing. So positive is like putting on phylacteries, that's positive. Negative would be abstaining from a certain activity, like not wearing a garment that has wool and linen. So that's a negative. Okay. Now, how do you have a positive when it comes to abstaining from certain animals? Logically, it doesn't seem possible. If you take a look at Maimonides, when he talks about the laws, he formulates his laws in his 14 books. So he says that there is a commandment to know and to differentiate between the various animals, the kosher animals and the non-kosher animals. And he quotes the verse right here in Deuteronomy. And I'm sorry, it's in my mistake. It's in Leviticus, in Leviticus 11:47. It says to differentiate between the unclean and between the clean, and between the animal, this means the wild animal eaten and between the wild animal that is not eaten. So Maimonides says that is the positive commandment. In other words, it's not enough for a person just to eat kosher. Let's say, for instance, a person was never fed something non-kosher. He doesn't really fulfill the mitzvah, according to this. The commandment is really to know and to gain knowledge to differentiate between the kosher and the non-kosher. Now, why is it so important to differentiate? The reason is, as I said before, it's not that God dislikes certain animals. A camel is not inferior to a sheep, and any animal, any creature, even if we may find it disgusting personally, to God, it's God's creature. And we say that, as a matter of fact, we say God's mercy is on all creation. So, and that means the species as well, every species. So these are all the works of God. So God does not despise any of his creatures. But what it means is that the idea of kosher is to raise a person to a state of holiness where he has a supremacy of the mind. In other words, the mind distinguishes and differentiates between a certain type of food that he may eat, a certain type of food that he must not eat. And before he indulges in a physical desire, he has to go through